reasons Alexa is so good. Oh, I should have known. Actually, I take that back, John. I should have realized this was all one. My apologies. My apologies. I should have realized. Anyway, let me try that again. David Webb writes, one of the reasons Alexa is so good at general knowledge questions is that there's a whole community of people writing answers for these questions in return for karma points. You can find the Alexa answer site here. I had no idea this was a thing, and this blew my friggin' mind
Oh,
that
I
this
had
is
no idea. That's the
right.
Amazon approach, Mechanical Turk.
Yep.
How do they
It's
do
nuts.
this? Do they pay a bunch of people not too much money to do it?
Oh,
Oh, well,
these
I
are
don't. Do they even
really
pay?
sad.
They just sad, but do they even pay, or are they just doing it for
Well, I don't
karma?
know what karma points are, so here's the thing. These two things go together because talking about the retrieval augmented generation, the idea that you have a piece of software that like looks to the side at a database of authoritative information before it goes to the LLM. It's like, wow, that's a clever. We've talked about this before. Like, some way to either constrain or provide additional data that is more authoritative than just guess based on your giant soup of knowledge. But then the other route is, no, don't do that. Just pay people, or just get people to figure it out. Like, just get someone to look it up and put into like essentially, how does that retrieval augmented generation? How does that database off the side get populated? Just have people putting in answers to questions. When did Michael Jackson die? Someone puts that in, and now that is part of that authoritative database that the software looks up before it goes to the LLM, because that's what you really need. Like, for IMDb and stuff, you've already got that data, but for just like, what's a thing that somebody might ask? I don't know, all the US presidents, their ages and birthplaces, sports results in popular sports for the past several decades, famous people, like, and so just to generate all of those facts and put them into sort of a structured form so you can look aside at that information, the Amazon approach to that is get people to do it.
It's bananas. I mean, I'm not surprised. As soon as I read it, I was like, what? Oh, yeah,
All right,
okay.
so a
But
selection of
still.
questions from this site. Does white bread have bleach in it? What does the name Supreme mean? And my favorite, what's open heart surgery?
Oh, my.
These are, I mean, see, the thing is, what does Amazon know? Amazon knows what people ask because they have thousands and thousands of microphones in people's houses that are just listening, and people are asking them questions. And when they don't know the answer, I'm sure they write them off to the side somewhere and tally them up and smush them all together and find out, boy, a lot of people want to know if white bread has bleach in it. Let's add that to the list and throw it into the list. And some human picks it out and writes in the answer that says, you hope not.
Oh, I think I found my soulmate. Somebody asked, what is the golf tournament? How do birds get water in the winter?
How
That's
is Babby
actually a good
Farm?
question. Oh my God, this is
Magnets, how
amazing.
do they work?
I'm on one hand, some of these are very endearing. Many of them are just kind of sad.
Well,
Where does Cupid
people
come
need
from?
answers.
My word. All right, final note. Apparently everything's coming up, Marco. I mean Milhouse, I mean Marco right now. Microsoft's keyboards and mice will live on, baby. Microsoft surprised everyone last year by deciding to discontinue its range of popular mice, keyboards, and PC accessories. I don't know where this is from. I apologize. I can't cite the source. But anyways,
I think The
after
Verge had a
decades
big
of
article about it.
Okay, after decades of Microsoft-branded PC hardware, the software giant has decided to focus on the Surface brand instead. Now a unique partnership will see Microsoft's PC accessories live on thanks to accessory maker InCase. There are 23 products in total that will be available later this year. We will put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, this is great, because Microsoft over the years has made some pretty great keyboards and mice, and they tend to make them for a very long time because, they tend to not be, super exciting. You don't need to change them that often. And people like them, and businesses buy a ton of them. So it's a pretty decent business to be in. It's not super exciting, but it's nice, reliable income for products that they've designed and manufactured, oftentimes like 15, 20 years ago, and they're still making. It did kind of baffle everyone when Microsoft, announced like, hey, we're just going to stop doing this after a very long time. We're going to stop doing this fairly low needs business for reasons. I don't know why. And a lot of people were upset because, like, when you can't get your keyboard anymore, and I mean, the downside is, like, my favorite keyboard, the Sculpt Ergonomic, is extremely short lived. It only lasts, like, 2 or 3 years usually before it dies and you have to buy a new one. So a lot of fans of these keyboards were very upset about this. And so now, InCase has effectively entered some kind of partnership with Microsoft where they're not like, you know, making their own brand new things necessarily. They're just basically continuing Microsoft's existing manufacturing operations to make these keyboards. So they're continuing like what sounds like basically the same factories, you know, the same parts, the same designs, same suppliers. It'll just have the InCase branding on it, and then InCase will then, I assume, support these. So I guess that's good. I don't know a ton about InCase. You know, they seem like a, you know one of those kind of like mass semi-budget brand makers of a bunch of different PC accessories over the years. So it's probably not a bad thing, you know, for the quality of the product or anything. It's just a good thing. We're going to keep having these, you know, keyboards and mice that we love so much. They're going to keep being made, and that's great. And I would love for some, you know, in some future, I would love for one of these 1,000 different, you know, fancy keyboard companies that exist to make something that is as ergonomic as the Sculpt ergonomic keyboard, but no one ever has. Yes, I know about the new Logitech one. It's not. Like, no one ever has matched this keyboard. Please, for the love of all that is holy, someone make ergonomic keyboards that, A, tilt downwards towards the top of them, not downwards towards the bottom, so that's called reverse tilting. B, have kind of a bulbous peak in the middle of them that then slopes downward to the left and right. That's called, I believe, that's called tenting. And C, does not have the giant extended numpad on the right side. That way you have to keep your mouse like all the way in New Jersey off to the right side, and it forces your arm to bend out more. Ergonomic keyboards are very simple to make if you follow those three guidelines. No one does it. I don't know why. But anyway, until anyone else does, we can now buy the Microsoft ones again through, well, we can soon, rather, buy the Microsoft ones again through InCase.
Did you look at the that article? They list the products that InCase will be making. I think it's like 23 individual products.
Sure did.
Guess what's not on that list?
Oh, no.
What? Your
mouse?
Oh, no!
Oh. Well, that's a different
Come
kind of
on.
Oh, no. I thought it was a Marco oh, no. It turns out it's a John oh, no.
Oh, no, I checked.
Yeah, I was so disappointed. When I first saw the story, I'm like, oh, my mouse is there. I'm fine, but it's not. It's the Bluetooth ergonomic mouse, which I think does not support wired connection, which is how I use mine. So it's the same shape as mine, but then I couldn't use it plugged in, and I haven't had good luck with the various wireless things here, so I don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe, I mean, they make the Bluetooth ergonomic mouse. Why don't they also make the Microsoft Precision mouse, which is just the Bluetooth ergonomic mouse but with a wired connection? Or maybe what they're calling the Bluetooth ergonomic mouse will also have the wired connection. We'll see. I can't tell from the picture, but it's not looking great for my mouse preferences. And my mouse, kind of like Marco's keyboard, as we noted, aside from all the problems I have with it, the rubber thing on the side wears out. It gets like a soft, gross spot on it, so it has a lifetime ticking down on it as well.
And to
sound
be
like
fair,
great
like,
products.
I mean, to be fair, like, I don't think that's that unreasonable for keyboards and mice, which are these like very high moving parts, high
usage kind of
product.
It's unreasonable for I don't know, to speak to your keyboard, but I think it's unreasonable for a mouse because I think I had my original mouse for what maybe it was like 1 or 2 years, maybe it was less than a year. But like we have materials for mice that can withstand holding it and using it. I used mice for years and years and years, and if you just make the whole mouse out of that plastic, you're fine. Or if you make it out of a rubber that survives, like Logitech rubber, I've never worn through the rubber on a Logitech mouse. I'm sure it varies depending on your skin chemistry and which particular mouse you have, but like I'm not doing anything really weird to my mouse. It should last way longer than these last, like way, 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 way longer. Like, and I feel the same way about your keyboard. I use an Apple Extended 2 keyboard for like, you know, 10, 12 years, and it was fine, despite the, you know, broken off F5 key. And that was the fault of a pocket knife, not the keyboard. I think your standards are too low for peripherals. How's your, what do you call it, the Apple mouse? Is there anything wearing off on that one?
I mean, very slowly, the big, long strips of plastic that kind of serve as, like, anti-skid things, they very slowly develop scratches over time, but otherwise, no. That
and you can replace
said,
the little Teflon feet. Like, you can just take those out and put new ones in there. That's on most good mice. But, yeah, the only reason I'm using the Microsoft one is, one, the scroll wheel feels really good. It feels the way I want it to feel. The people have different preferences in their scroll wheels, but I like the way this one feels. And two, the shape of this mouse is as close as I could get to the shape that I prefer.
See, scroll wheels are like transmissions. You know what's better than a manual transmission? No transmission. You know what's better than a great scroll wheel? No scroll wheel.
I kind of like scroll wheels.
The magic mouse, man, it gets me every day. It's like you try to use anything else, it's like, oh, I gotta click this thing. So, like, what year is this?
See, the funny thing is, so I am a magic trackpad user for the last several years. We've been over this before, but I was one of the last people that I knew to use a magic mouse. And the thing with the magic mouse that got me was not the scrolling and the inertial scrolling, which I agree with you, Marco. I'm not arguing not a bit, but what got me on the magic mouse, which I guess you can do this with some of these like MX Master mice or whatever, but you can do the two fingers side to side, or maybe, no, I'm sorry, it was two fingers side to side, go forward and back. That's what it is on Safari. And three fingers side to side is what I was trying to say, to go through different virtual screens, which I think I'm the only one of the three of us that does that, but, you know, to go through different spaces. And so it's the lateral two and three finger things that really kept me on the magic mouse for years. And I don't remember what the impetus was for me to go to the trackpad. I think I just wanted to give it a shot and then ended up really liking it. But I've been all trackpad, I think, since my iMac Pro, if I'm not mistaken. It's been a fair bit of time now.
There's certainly a lot more room on a trackpad to three-finger swipe sideways. I mean, yeah, doing that on the surface of a mouse is tight.
Or maybe I'm sorry, maybe it's wrong. Maybe it's one finger left and right. I forget. It's been so long since I've used a magic mouse. I have one. I just haven't used it. In fact, I think I have my iPad Pro's one, but I use them so rarely. But whatever this situation was, it was like one or two fingers to go back and forward in Safari. I wanted to say it was two, and then like three to do spaces, if memory serves. But again, I might have that wrong. And if it's wrong, it doesn't matter. But you get
if my Mac Pro came with a magic mouse, it's still in the box. I think it came. It must have come with one, right? I don't remember. It came with a keyboard, and I'm using the keyboard. So, yeah, the mouse has got to be in the box.
Well, it could have come with a trackpad. Oh, I think you could have optioned one or the other.
I would never have optioned the trackpad.
There.
Although now I have a trackpad. We finally found my wife's old trackpad. We were cleaning up in the office, and now I have this trackpad sitting on the desk in front of me.
I'm so sorry that you have to be that close to a piece that's similar to a laptop.
They're hard to store because they're a little wedge shape. I'm like, maybe should I try to use it? So I just put it on my desk. I don't know. It's just sitting there now.
You try to store it in a stack, and everything slides off slowly.
Yeah. It's paired to the computer. Like I moved the cursor with it. And I'm like, okay, never mind.
Semi-real time follow up that Marco, you might not even want to include in the show, but I did send you pictures of the Subaru in the chat if you wanted to look and have a real time reaction for the bootleg people in Slack. I'm sorry.
Do grasshoppers have tongues?
Are we back on Alexa?
This is like, what was it? Yahoo Answers?
Yeah.
What's the definition? The origin of how is Babby formed?
Anyway, so if you want to see a melted Subaru, you can look in the Slack.
What's the difference between couch and sofa? That's a good question.
That sounds like
I don't
robot
think
or
I
not
know the difference.
Yeah, lounge and living room.
Right? There you go. It all comes full circle. All right, let's talk about news that's been going on. And on Monday, I believe it was, Apple announced, it was the first working day of 2024 for most, white collar people. Apple announced that the Vision Pro is going to launch on February 2, and you'll be able to order it on Friday the 19th. Apple, I'm very surprised, is continuing to be kind to the East Coasters with an 8 a.m. Introduction time, which I am here for. I am very appreciative of that, whether or not I end up ordering one. I am happy to go through the summary here, and I will continue to do so until one of you jumps in. But basically, it will be available at all United States Apple Store locations, and it will also be available online. It's unclear to me, and I don't think it has been made clear, whether or not you must pick up at a store, which was a rumor that we heard for a while. You can get lenses for it. You can get reader style optical inserts for $100. I presume that's $100 for a pair. I actually don't know.
It's interesting that they didn't say that, but it does say plural, so I'm going to say pair.
Yeah, okay, and then glasses, lenses are very cheap.
And then if
they're,
you need,
or in Apple Land, they're $100.
Yes, right, exactly. Everywhere else it's like $5. Apple.
Yeah, you can buy them at the drugstore for $2 or from Apple for $100. But. Right.
And then if you need full-on prescription lenses or optical inserts, that's $150. Again, the assumption is for a pair, but that isn't absolutely stated, so we're not sure.
And that is actually, quote-unquote, inexpensive as compared to the ridiculous system we have in the U.S. for actual prescription lenses that you buy. Some people were discussing this online about the pricing for the prescription lenses in particular were thinking, if you were to buy glasses, plain old glasses at a regular glasses store in the U.S. and you had prescription lenses and you got those lenses for $150, they're going to be the cheapest lenses the place has to sell to you. So they're not going to be the super fancy high index, plastic where the makes the lenses thinner or whatever. Probably less of an issue because inside a headset and no one's looking at them anyway. But I do wonder what material these are made out of and what the index is. High index is like how much does this bend the light for the thickness, right? And so if you have really bad vision like I do, to get something that is my correct prescription and it's not high index plastic, the glasses are incredibly thick. You talk about Coke bottle glasses, but they're another one of those things that makes sense to older people, maybe not younger people. Coca-Cola used to come in glass bottles, and if you cracked off the bottom of the glass bottle, the glass in the bottom was thicker. And if you had really thick glasses, people would say you had Coke bottle glasses because they look like really, really thick glass stuck on them. I got them once. One time when I was a kid, my parents got me non-high index plastic glasses. They were so thick. They were like a centimeter thick. It was ridiculous looking, just huge. Massive. Every time you see like glasses frames in the store or like a model wearing glasses, they're always wearing them with these lenses that are like wafer thin, right? But when you have actual bad vision and you don't use high index plastic, the lenses become thicker than the glasses frame very quickly, like 5 times thicker, not just a little bit thicker. So it's no longer like, oh, look at this person wearing these glasses with probably no lenses in them at all. They look fashionable. They don't look fashionable when a centimeter thick piece of plastic is in the middle of each one of them. Anyway, I'm interesting to see what kind of material these $150 prescription lenses are made out of. And again, maybe it makes no difference inside the headset, but I have to think thickness might be some factor because some people are using this headset with no lenses. Those people who are blessed with very good vision, right? And that means the screens, like these lenses, are an additional thickness between you and the screen. And I don't know if if you have very long eyelashes, are they going to brush against the prescription lenses because they're so close to the screen? And maybe you two can answer these questions, but you can't talk about it. But we'll find out in a little bit. Anyway, I'm mostly happy with these prices because, look, even if it's per eye $150, it's still less than I was fearing they would be. So I guess that's good.
I wonder too. I mean, first of all, like, you know, the prescription lens industry is famously like very inflated. But I wonder too, like, there's so many things that, like, you know, reasons that you would get higher end prescription lenses that wouldn't really matter inside the Vision Pro. You know, you mentioned thickness. Like, you know, I would assume a lot of the reason why thin lenses are in fashion is, first of all, because they look better, like, fashionably wise. Second of all, because they're lighter weight. In here, neither of those things is substantially significant, you know? And also, you know, all the different coatings you can get, like the anti-glare coating, anti-scratch, like all these different coatings they try to upsell you on with prescription lenses, none of those are really in play here. Like, that they wouldn't really matter here or be necessary. So maybe the combination of all those factors means that it really is not that expensive to give you.
So the two things that I think are still factors, like I said, is distance, how much space is there for a really, really thick lens, right? And the second thing is like sort of the sidewall dimension. Like the thicker the glasses, the bigger the sidewall. And the sidewalls are not really participating optically, except insofar as light may enter the lens and bounce off the sidewall and come back to you, and you don't want that light. Like, especially since the sides of lenses are often not, like, the lenses themselves are clear and polished and everything, but the sidewalls are kind of like smoky, you know what I mean? Like, that I know from experience, having worn those glasses that were way too thick, that were the not high index plastic, those thick smoky sidewalls often were sort of in my peripheral vision, and I felt like light would like light them up, like it would light up frosted glass, and that you probably don't want even inside a headset. So we'll see.
All right, so the Vision Pro comes with a solo knit band, which I think is the big thick thing they pictured most often that goes around the back.
Yeah, it's like a catcher's mitt on the back of your head.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it was the only thing in the original, like the launch video and all of the launch artwork for the headset, with the exception of maybe one image. It was that one big single strap that goes behind your head and gets really wide when it goes in the back of your head.
Yeah, it's a bunch of lines in the back.
Yep. Then it also has a dual loop band, which Apple says gives users two options for the fit that works best for them. Or I guess
is that the Hermes version that goes around your head twice?
Right. It's one above your head and one behind your head. Right. And then
That's what the two options they're talking about are. One is the solo.
Right.
I have these names. One is the single strap band and one is the one with two straps. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then it also includes a light seal. Two light seal cushions, I guess. What are the differences between them there? So the light seal is the big thick part and the cushion is the part that's actually pressing against your face?
Yes. I can tell you probably why. As the father of a child who has used a VR headset a lot, very heavily, the part that squishes against your face gets really gross and stinky. So cool. It's good to be able to replace those easily.
I wonder if they're machine washable.
Yeah, goodness, who knows? So yeah, two light seal cushions, an Apple Vision Pro cover for the front of the device.
I saw that. I saw that people have like patent filings on it. And I'm like, this is interesting. I wonder if they'll ship this. And lo and behold, a few days later, a cover for the front of the device. Like the front of the device, I know there's a screen there and it's made of glass and it shows your eyeballs or whatever, but it really doesn't participate much in the process of what you see as the wearer. So I guess you're covering the screen. So people can get a scratch-free view of your virtual eyeballs?
Will it operate with the cover? Or, like, will the cameras shoot through the cover? Like, are there openings for all the cameras?
I'm assuming this is, like, for storage.
Yeah,
and
that's
transport.
What I thought.
That's why I assume, like, because for a cover to actually have it be operated through, you'd have to have openings for all the cameras, all the vent holes, the digital crown, like, you know, all the different parts of it that kind of are required. They probably are not doing that. It's probably just like, you know, a cover for storage.
Yeah, that would be like a screen protector, but this has a cover for the front of the device. I'm kind of picturing like the weird bra they have on the AirPods Max, right?
Yeah.
But for this.
That's what I was picturing.
Yeah, because that went so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, similar, because like, again, if I'm going to transport this, something that merely covers the screen on the front is not doing the job of making this transportable. The whole rest of this ungainly thing is still out there flopping around, right?
Yeah. And that's part of, you know, that's one of the big, I think, restrictions and challenges on this whole design they've gone with, of having the outside be a screen. Like, again, look at every other VR headset. The outside is just a flat piece of plastic with some sensors on it. And Apple's like, no, this is going to be a single giant piece of glass that'll show some creepy version of your eyes through it. And, you know, it's a bunch of trade-offs for sure. And one of the trade-offs is, it's more expensive and bigger and much heavier and everything else. Another one of the trade-offs is that it becomes much harder to transport.
All right. And then you get a free, for the low, low cost of $3,500 plus, polishing cloth, which is very exciting. You get a battery, which is, you know, compulsory to use the device, a USB-C charge cable, and a USB-C power adapter. So that is what's in the box, which, to be honest, is not an insignificant amount of stuff. That is a fair bit of stuff.
Yeah. I saw some rumors and discussion based on patent filings or whatever, of other possible strap options, including, so the straps that they show in their PR photos have that little, little pod that has the speakers in it that fires the sound down into your ears. But of course, if you've decided that you're going to use your AirPods or something with it, rather than using those speakers, you don't need those pods anymore. So, and like we saw when this thing launched, these straps are actually made up of two portions. One is kind of a stiff portion that connects to the headset, and two is a, like, the loose sort of strappy thing that goes around your head, that you could replace the stiff portions with ones that don't have the speaker pods in them for a sleeker, lighter weight thing. But it seems like that's not a thing that they're shipping. It was just something they considered during the design.
But yeah, overall, this is actually pretty well accessorized, it seems, like right in the box. And this is just one of the wonderful things of it being a brand new product line. You know, like originally the iPod came with like the dock and the cable, like all this other stuff, right? And then as the iPod line went on, it became, you know, cheaper and cheaper, and there was a lot less stuff in the box and more stuff you had to buy separately. Same with the iPhone. You know, the iPhone used to come with more stuff in the box than it does now.
A charger. At least this comes with something you can charge it with.
Right. So at least, like, you know, right now we're still in the really early part of this, and so they're going to give us all the accessories. But I bet in 5 years, you know, whatever Vision line products are out then, you're going to see a lot less of the stuff coming with them.
I mean, the most glaring one are the straps, because it's like, okay, one of these straps is probably going to quote-unquote win. You know what I mean? Like, I know people's heads are shaped differently and everything, but, like, them shipping both the straps is kind of like, we couldn't figure out one strap that worked the best for everybody, so here's two. Good luck. Like, and obviously the one with the top strap, it should help a little bit with the weight, because it literally goes over the top of your head rather than having to pinch the thing against the front and back of your head to keep it from sliding downwards, right? But they're still shipping the single one. So it's like, it's not even like, you know, the thing weighs the same no matter what. Is the single strap one just for people like me with big noses who can support the weight of this? But you really don't want the weight to be supported on your nose. So I don't understand. Like, the two straps being shipped here is kind of like they're just throwing up their hands and like, it's $3,500. We can afford it, and we couldn't figure it out. I have to think that the correct strap is probably neither of these. It's something. It's an evolution of one of them. And I think having real people buy this thing and use it and, you know, complain about it. People with different hairstyles and different size and shape heads and different tolerance for pinching in different places and different size skulls. Because again, this, you know, you can get a different face shield for this, but it doesn't come in different widths. It doesn't even come in two different sizes like the Apple Watch. It is the size it is, and they do the best they can to make it conform to your face. But if you have a really, really wide head or really, really narrow head, there's only so much you can do, and ditto with the strap. So this is definitely sort of an experimental kind of like, let's see what sticks. Here's two straps. Good luck.
You know, it also might just be that the last thing they want is for someone to dislike the product based on some, you know, fairly avoidable comfort issue. You know, they're really putting themselves out there with this. They're launching this whole new thing. It's a massive risk. And you know there's going to be a whole bunch of people who get it and try to, you know, try to make YouTube videos about how much it sucks or whatever. So, like, you know, they're trying to cover their bases. They're trying to, like, make sure, you know, we don't want anyone to go through the process of spending $3,500+ on this thing, going to the store, getting themselves fit for the shield, getting the prescription optical inserts and all this other stuff. Like, this is quite a process to get this thing, you know, made for you and fit for you, only to then discover, oh, it's kind of uncomfortable. So
that's
probably
why
they're
doing
both
straps.
Like,
that's the thing about this, because they haven't, like, how many people have ever worn this in the entire world? You could probably fit them in a pretty small theater, right? Not many people have ever used this. And now you're going to sell a million of them in a year. You're going to very quickly find out, okay, this part of this strap pinches this percentage of people, and the bands are too wide or too narrow or tilt down too much or not enough. Like, they could do all the testing they can internally, but you're only going to find out once this... And it's inevitable that it's going to be uncomfortable. Like, it's... I know from, again, from wearing glasses. Glasses frames can be uncomfortable. That's one of the main things that I use to choose my glasses frames, and also one of the reasons I'm wearing glasses frames that are older than my children, is because I find a lot of glasses frames uncomfortable. And yes, I know with glasses frames, you can bend them and put them into little hot beads and try to get them all lined up and do all these things. But the combination of, like, durability and comfort and which frames work best on your face with your nose and your ears and all, you know, everything else, it's a very personal thing, and it's extremely difficult to find something that works like it, especially if things that get strapped to your head. Even, you know, shopping for things like ski goggles, which are kind of similar to this, and they have the advantage of you probably wearing a hat to cushion the strap going around your head. So, I think they're probably doing the best they can, but I look at all these straps and I'm like, these cannot be the final form. I mean, obviously the real solution to this problem is make the headset smaller and lighter, and I hope they do that, yeah. But judging by their love of that stupid aluminum frame and curved glass front, I'm not sure what kind of progress they're going to make on that in the next year or two.
I mean, I, if I had to guess, I bet the front screen is the first thing to go in future revision of this product.
On the cheap model, yeah.
Yeah, like I'm sure there's going to be a Vision Air or something like that. And
they
it's
just
going
put
to be
stickers
just,
there with eyeballs on them.
Yeah, yeah, and it'll be, because, you know, aluminum is much lighter than glass. So if the front of it becomes mostly a flat piece of aluminum with some cameras on it or whatever, like, that would actually be a significant weight savings.
They should really make it out of plastic. Like, I think there's more of an excuse to use the AirPods Max because headphones at least get banged around and your head could hit something sideways. But honestly, this thing, what is this going to be banging into? Hopefully nothing, especially since they always want you to be seated while you're using it. They never show you, like, up and playing Beat Saber.
But that's during use. You still got to get it places if it ever leaves your house.
Just put it in that little cover. That'll totally protect it.
No, I mean, honestly, John, you're right. Like, I mean, honestly, both the AirPods Max and the Vision Pro should probably be made of more plastic than they are, because that would make them both lighter and that would significantly improve comfort.
They should just, that's why I keep hoping that Apple will get into, like, carbon fiber or something. I know it's not feasible. We're always looking for, like, how about something that's lighter and durable but is not metal, and carbon fiber fulfills those things, except it's extremely expensive and annoying to manufacture and has also some other advantages. But it's like, if you're going to stubbornly refuse to do plastic, is there some other material that you'd feel okay about using? I don't know, magnesium? Like,
titanium.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Also, like, keep in mind, too, like, one of the major reasons they would want to save weight is to then immediately spend it by putting the battery inside the headset.
Oh, no, they don't want to do that.
They don't want to, but I think they need to do that at some point.
So what the other people do is they put the battery on the behind your head, right?
Yeah, the
to
back
try to
of
balance
the
weight on the front, but it's still weight. It's not great.
Well, and even that, like, you know, like the Quest 2, Well, yeah, because now Adam got a Quest 3 for Christmas, so now I have some experience seeing both of them around the house. They like all of those headsets have internal batteries to the front of the headset also, but they now offer like extended battery head straps that have more battery on the back of the head. So like that's I can see Apple doing something like that down the road maybe, but I think step one is get the price down of this product, and then step two is get the battery inside of it. And so I think any advances they're going to have and any changes they make to eliminate weight or size should be spent then going towards those goals.
Yeah, maybe. I have to see what this battery is like in real life to see like what kind of weight are we talking about, because we know the battery doesn't last very long as it is. So, you know, I think it should sound like you know, we talked about the iPhone MagSafe backpack is the like a magnetically attached backpack strap. Imagine like an actual backpack that a human could wear with two straps and had a huge battery in it, and you could be in your Vision Pro for 48 hours.
Oh, someone will definitely sell that, I'm sure.
To be very healthy. Talk about a stinky cushion.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. So Apple also noted that the Vision Pro is designed with the environment in mind, with 100% recycled rare earth metals, rare earth elements in all magnets, and 100% recycled tin soldering and gold plating in multiple printed circuit boards. The frame and battery enclosure contain 100% recycled aluminum, and the light seal and solo knit band are each made with over 70% recycled yarn. The Vision Pro meets Apple's high standards for energy efficiency and is free of mercury, brominated, I hope I pronounced that right, flame retardants, PVC, and beryllium. The packaging is 100% fiber-based, bringing Apple closer to its goal of eliminating plastics in all packaging by 2025. Kudos to them.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, they've made a pretty good effort here. Like, we talked about the watch as, like, the one product that was totally carbon neutral and everything. And it's like you can tell, like, there are some parts of it that they still couldn't do. Not everything is 100% recycled, but they're trying as hard as they can here to use recycled materials in all the places where they can, which is good. It's interesting that the solo knit band is 70% recycled, but the double loop band, no recycled stuff.
Well, I'm sure some of it, well, I would assume.
They would have listened.
I'm sure. Yeah, but if it was only like 10%, I don't think they would have listened.
I mean, it kind of makes me think that the original plan was, hey, this one strap is going to work for everybody, and they eventually learned late in the game, you know, as in 2 years ago. Yeah, I know we thought this was going to be the strap. Because if you look at these two straps, look at the one they show in all the PR things, the single one with the big catcher's mitt, and then look at the double strap, and the double strap is like, is that a prototype? Or is that the final? It doesn't have that Apple look, and it would make sense that they spent all this time making sure they could make what was going to be the one and only strap. Can we manufacture that with 70% recycled yarn, blah, blah, blah? And then, you know, like I said, late in the game, as in a year or two ago, they said, we need another strap. This one doesn't work for enough people. Can we slap some of the other real fast? Fine, but we can't do the recycled stuff. Fine, just ship it.
Fine. All right. So we also got some more Vision Pro info. The Vision Pro, well, this is from Bloomberg, will be equipped with 16 gigs of RAM, the same amount of memory that was included in the Vision Pro development kits distributed by Apple last year. Wish I could have got one of those. Gurman says that YouTubers and members of the media selected for reviews will meet with Apple on January 16th for a hands-on experience, with a follow-up meeting to take place on the 23rd to go over the device's features a second time. Reviews are set to be published at the end of January. I will be the canary in the coal mine and say, I did not get invited to this. I also did not get invited to this.
Yep.
So, John, neither. You're going to go?
No, but the interesting thing about this is that, and they've done this with Vision Pro already. So, like, Gruber, for example, like, saw it when it was launched, and then they also called him back to have him, like, look at his, you know, photos in the spatial video thing and stuff. Like, a bunch of people have done that, right? The whole idea of, like, we're going to have media see this before everyone else, fine, that's normal. But having them come back twice, I think, is especially for this product, because they're going to, you know, meet with them on the 16th and give them a hands-on experience. And I'm assuming they're going to send them home with devices, and then they'll come back on the 23rd. And I think coming back on the 23rd is where they're going to hear from the people who said, I tried to use this, but it's hurting my head here, and this is fogging up, and blah, 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 and I think I got the wrong prescription. Because that's the second for Apple to get, like, good reviews, essentially. That's a chance for them to address the concerns that are only going to come up when the people take these things home and try to actually use them for extended periods of time for real work. And that, I feel like that January 23rd thing is essentially the fitting, you know, the final fitting. Okay, how'd this work for you? Did we give you the right face shield thing, or do you need a different one? Did that strap work for you? Which strap did you like better? Tell us more about why. Like, all of that, that is really kind of doing everything they can so that, you know, 50% of the first wave of reviews isn't just, I was a little uncomfortable because I don't think it fit me right, but oh well. The 23rd is a chance for Apple to fix that and say, okay, you did pick the wrong face shield. Try this one. Try the bigger one. Try the smaller one.
I'm guessing the 16th is a preview because pre-orders open a few days after that, and they want people to talk about them so that people will pre-order it, and then I'm guessing no one gets review hardware until the 23rd.
Maybe. I mean, if what I said is not what they're doing, it's what they should be doing.
Well, right, it should be inviting us.
Right. Well, no, but I think the having a second round where you hear people's complaints is so much more important. Like, you're not gonna, if they have complaints about like software or bugs, you can't fix that, right? But if it's about complaints about fit, it's like, you can fix that. We have different face shields. I can, you know, give you suggestions on the strap. Tell me what problems you were having. Maybe we had them too. We can help you with them. It's not like when people get an early thing and there's a bunch of bugs in it, they, you know, what are the marketing people going to do? They're like, well, we can't fix that software before this launches. So just, oh well.
All right, and then Apple released an ad for the Vision Pro, which they call Get Ready, and the general gist, it's only 30 seconds, and if I were to paint you a word picture, it's basically a bunch of movie characters either putting on helmets or face masks or things over their eyes, and I had forgotten about this, but a lot of people pointed out that this is very much in the vein of the Hello iPhone ad, which was a bunch of people answering the phone from movies and saying, hello, you know, how can I help you? What's up, et cetera, et cetera. And very, very spiritually similar between the two. I thought it was a good ad. I mean, it's not making me run up and, you know, get ready to order a Vision Pro immediately, but it was a good ad.
The thing I like about the original iPhone ad is the only people who remember that ad were people who are paying attention to the iPhone when it was launched, because that was the launch ad for the original iPhone. And that means it was just a bunch of Apple nerds, because everyone else is like, oh, Apple's coming out with a phone, whatever. But people weren't that interested in the iPhone any more than they're interested in the Mac or anything else at that stage. And I guess the iPod
disagree.
Was out there. No, I know there was lots of hype around the iPhone, but like, look at how well it sold in the first year. And it's not because they couldn't make enough of them. People were not that jazzed to get an iPhone. It's like, that's an Apple thing. I like my iPod, but I also like my current cell phone and it'll be fine or whatever.
I don't remember it that way either. Yeah,
well, Casey didn't even remember the ad, and he is an Apple nerd. And
I think
if you ask the average person on the street, do you remember the original iPhone ad? And then ask the same question of like, do you remember the original Mac ad? You're going to get very different answers.
That's not a fair comparison at all.
Why not?
First of all, the Mac ad was during the Super Bowl, and I don't recall when the Hello ad
might
was.
Ad did get a lot of airplay, but I think people are like, yeah, that's that Apple phone thing anyway.
No, I mean, I remember the time span from January to June. Like, so January was the announcement, and then it was available in June. That time span, it was, everyone was buzzing about the iPhone.
Everyone in our
months.
World, yes.
No, I disagree. It was mainstream. It was everywhere. Yeah. Everyone was buzzing about it for 6 months straight.
But they didn't buy it when it came out because it was too expensive, and who wants an Apple phone?
It was like, you know, waiting till your contract was up on your current phone or whatever. Because that was a very contract-based buying period. Everybody had 1 or 2 year contracts on their phones.
And also, AT&T sucked at the time.
Yeah.
And it was, and in America anyway, you had to have it on AT&T. And I remember that was not going to happen for years. And then eventually, both for my own purposes, like, I didn't want to do that. And then eventually I decided I lusted after and wanted the iPhone so badly that I'd be willing to try AT&T. And then I had to sell Aaron on it because we were on a joint, were and are on a joint
plan. Why'd you have to sell her on it? Everybody loves the iPhone.
No, you're missing my point.
The level
is that
hype it had and buzz around mainstream audiences was way bigger than what the Vision Pro has now.
I think they're both similar. I think you're misremembering the iPhone, because the iPhone is now the iPhone. But back then it was like Apple's trying to do a phone and people aren't sure how well it's going to do. But anyway, it's coming out. Nerds are excited about it and it's interesting, but it's also just kind of a curiosity and off in the corner, because the real cell phone market is Nokia or whatever.
No.
It took so long to turn people. Just look at the sales figures. Look at the sales chart for the iPhone.
No, but you're misconstruing two different things. The iPhone was crippled when it was new, which at first sounds like
so was the Vision Pro. It's $3,500. You can tons of things you can't do with it. You know, it's like
a lot of
people, iPad apps.
No, a lot of people are saying with the Vision Pro, I don't even see why I would want that. Whereas the original iPhone, it was like, okay, next time I get a new renewal on my contract, slash when it comes to my carrier, I'm jumping
Bingo.
On that.
Bingo.
I think you have to look at the sales number and see that's not the way it played out. I think you're misremembering history and thinking the iPhone was always a hit that everybody wanted, and it wasn't. It took a while to convince people. It was mostly a curiosity that had lots of hype, and I think that's exactly like the Vision Pro. It's a curiosity that has lots of hype. And will the Vision Pro prove itself like the iPhone? We'll see.
I think we are all perhaps misremembering, because I could not disagree more with your characterization of what it was like in 2007-ish. Like, and especially even if I were to take your incorrect memory as fact, I would say that the moment anyone put their hands on a smartphone, immediately it clicked.
But
I remember,
they hadn't when the ad aired. That's my whole point. There's skepticism. Skepticism about the iPhone.
Well, but again, I mean, yes, I think there was a degree of skepticism, probably more than I'm giving it credit for, but certainly a lot less than I think you are remembering. I don't think people were near as skeptical as you seem to believe they were. But even on top of that, I think I agree with Marco that it was more about, wow, that sounds cool, but A, I've got another year and a half left on this phone. B, it is very expensive. And C, there's no friggin' way I'm getting on Singular or AT&T or what have you, because they suck. And I mean, I cannot overstate at the time. Now it's very different. In fact, I would say even a few years into the iPhone, it was very different. But at the time, Singular was and AT&T both were terrible. Yes. God, were they terrible.
That's the reason people weren't as interested. Once they heard it was AT&T only and or Singular only or whatever, and it's just like, oh, it's a curiosity, whatever. It wasn't, everyone in the Apple world was insanely hyped about it. Anyone who had touched it loved it. Tech nerds were totally into it. But look at the sales. Look, two years later, people's contracts are up. It's 2009. Wow, look at those sales. They're better than they were in 2007, but they're nothing like what they would become.
No one's arguing that it sold massively the first year. We're not saying that. What we're saying
it's not because people were like, oh, I want to get one the second I can. They could, and they didn't. They chose not to buy it.
No, maybe
they weren't convinced.
Because of other circumstances. I don't think it was because they were unconvinced. It was because of other circumstances.
I don't
circumstances
think it's like, oh, I wish I had one, but they're not on my network. I know
that's exactly what it was for me. No.
That was a huge part of it. What are you talking about, John? That was a massive part of it. That's why you could see the sales spike every time they would add a new major carrier.
The sales spike for this thing was the iPhone 6 when they finally made a big phone.
Oh, my God.
No, John.
The point is, when that ad aired, people were not like, oh, I can't wait to get an iPhone. Nerds were like that, but even among nerds, not everyone got one because they were expensive and it was AT&T only. So the ad aired and people were not like, oh my God, it's that phone, everyone's gonna get it, because everyone didn't get it. Look at the first year sales numbers, look at the second year sales numbers. So when the ad came, people were not dying to get it, and unlike the original Mac ad, they weren't intrigued by a mysterious thing they didn't know anything about, because they'd already seen the introduction.
I still think you're 100% wrong, but yep. I will say that the Vision Pro does not have anywhere near the level of mainstream interest and hype as the iPhone did.
Concur.
I think it's going to be a much slower launch, and that's, you know, given like manufacturing and supply realities, that's probably fine. I saw a few people on Mastodon over the last couple of days refer to it almost like launching a dev kit as a product. That's actually a pretty good analogy, because what we're going to see over the next year with the Vision Pro is basically very low sales numbers. It's a budding market. The initial buyers are going to be largely, you know, the early gadget adopters at the high end of the market, and then developers and people who are getting it for some kind of testing or development role. And we're going to see the app and content market probably very slowly grow over time. So it really is kind of like a tech preview that they're selling. It's so early still. And the mainstream consumers, I think, are going to have relatively little interest in jumping on this yet. You know, the price obviously is a massive thing holding it back. All the different physical limitations and awkwardnesses of it, I think it are going to keep it small for a while. But it doesn't need more than that right now, just because, they can't make more of them anyway. So, like, it's going to be a huge hit. It's going to sell out. It's going to be backordered. You know, I'm going to try to order one on day one. I think it's going to be very difficult to actually get, like, early delivery on it. I'm sure it's going to be one of those things where, like, you, like, refresh the Apple Store app over and over again until the time comes around, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, 12 weeks out, 18 weeks out, 24 weeks out. Like, it's going to be that kind of thing. But there is no comparison to the level of consumer excitement for the Vision Pro compared to the iPhone.
I think it's a pretty good comparison. But anyway, my point.
Oh, my word, John,
my whole point was.
Can everyone tell him how wrong he is, please? Please write him right now and tell him how wrong he is.
Don't ask people to write in because you're not going to like what they say. Anyway.
Shots fired.
Because people remember. People who are not in the Apple tech nerd sphere remember Apple people being excited about the phone, but them going, yeah, whatever, I'll check it out later. Anyway, my point is, when people see this ad, A, they're not going to remember the Hello ad, just like you didn't, Casey, and you were kind of into Apple stuff at that point, right? They're not going to remember the ad that's echoing. I did. It seems ridiculous to me that anyone who was in the Apple world would not remember it, but experience has shown that talking to people, lots of people didn't remember it, right? So they're not going to remember the Hello ad. When someone sees this ad on TV, they're going to be like, what is this? What they're going to say to themselves is, oh, yeah, it's that Apple headset thing I heard about. And then they're going to forget about it. And then in, 15 years, when we say, hey, do you remember the launch ad for Apple Vision Pro? They're going to be like, no. Oh, it was just like the launch ad for the phone, the iPhone. And you're like, the launch ad for the iPhone? The what? Nobody's going to remember these things because it's not a proven product yet. That's the whole point. People don't have it. People haven't used it. It's not a proven product. And so when you put out an ad like this, it's memorable to people like us because we're super hyped about it because we're super big Apple followers. But unless it is like a big artistic statement or a tease that everyone was curious about, like the 1984 ad, it's not going to stick in popular culture's mind. So that's why I think this ad is a good match with the iPhone ad. To basically be a copy of the same ad, but saying instead of people in movies picking up phones, it'll be people in movies putting things over their eyeballs. All I'm saying is kudos to Apple because I think you appropriately calibrated this ad to be a match for the iPhone. And of course, Apple's hope is just like the iPhone, this is going to be a huge hit, and we'll see about that. But that the parallels are obvious to me, both in the ads and in my expected reception of the device.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't know anyone personally that is amused by the Vision Pro that isn't a tech nerd, like a true up and down tech nerd. And I think a lot of people are casually interested in and I think like amongst my peer group, for example, I think the assumption is I will probably get one amongst these people. And I'd actually like to talk to you two about that in a minute. But the assumption is I'll get one. And I think every single one of them will, figuratively speaking, line up to try it. But I don't think that any of them are even for a fleeting moment considering buying one. I think they are at most like, oh, I wonder what that's like to use.
It's way more expensive than the iPhone was, obviously. And it's and talk about the dev kit aspects of it. All VR headsets, all things that you strap to your head that put screens in front of your eyeballs, they all look like and essentially behave like, not dev kits, but like, things that are tech nerdy in a way that is beyond normal, what a normal person expects to endure, right? I mean, it was used in jokes for movies for ages. Oh, you put these big headset on with screens in front of your eyeballs. And yes, some people do VR gaming, but even that is kind of nerdy. Anything this big, a big ski goggly screen thing that goes in your eyeballs, has not penetrated to the point where, like AirPods, they start off weird and then very quickly, oh, everyone just wears AirPods, it's fine. Again, Apple hopes that's what will happen with this, but at $3,500, it's not going to happen, right? But right now, this entire product category is a weird thing that tech people do. It has not graduated to a thing that everybody does or a thing that normal people do. And, you know, I'm not sure this is the product that's going to put it over that line, but certainly at the point now when it hasn't even launched, everyone is just looking askance at this entire product category of, like, remind me again why I'd want to strap that to my face, because they haven't tried it. So Apple hasn't had a chance to prove to them why they'd want to. And then the people who do use them are like, okay, well, can I play my favorite VR game on it? No. All right. Well, I'll just stick to my Meta, whatever.
Yeah. I'm very surprised that they didn't do some sort of keynote to just remind us why we should be excited about this. And this ad, the Get Ready ad, I don't debate that it's a good ad, but it did not make me think, yes, I can't wait to do blank.
It's for people who are already anticipating it.
Yeah.
Well, and I wonder if they're kind of holding back a little bit on like how hard they push this to consumers yet, because they know it's kind of a tough sell to most consumers right now.
Yeah, and it gives them breathing room to work out the issues. Maybe they still got the straps wrong. Maybe there is an issue with, again, condensation or breathability or something. Like, whatever the first year, like, stories about the design screw-ups they did or whatever, don't overhype it at this point. Like, under-promise, over-deliver. Have this be a year where you work out the kinks, figure out what works and what doesn't, figure out what people want to use it for, see what this deal is with the app ecosystem. Like, Apple has the breathing room to just spend this year doing that, which is why an ad that is aimed at people who already are anticipating this is good. It'll get those people excited. It'll let them, it'll be have the echo of the other ad, but it's not overhyping it to people who don't even know what it is. I think they will show this like during big football games wherever most people will not pay any attention to it. Or if they know anything, I'm like, oh yeah, I heard about that headset thing, whatever, anyway. But it's not like Apple Vision Pro will change the way you live your life, right? It's not saying that in that language to regular people. It's not making that promise at all. It didn't even show the product, right? Or maybe the very end it does, I guess. But it's definitely kind of an ad for the people who are already sold.
I think, too, like the initial batch of reviews is probably going to be all over the place. They're not going to all be universally positive because we know, like, gadget reviewers, tech people on YouTube, we know price is super important to those markets, and it's super important. And like, anytime somebody releases something that's very expensive in a market, that's like the headlining theme of all the reviews. Well, it's nice, but it's really expensive. Like, that's, and so we're going to keep hearing that. That's going to be most of the reviews early on is, okay, I tried it, it's cool, but it's really expensive. So
that's accurate.
It is. And this is, so again, like, that's why I think they're going to actually try to kind of low play it, because they don't want every consumer in the world to get the impression this is just some expensive thing they don't need. So again, like, I think they're going to play it a little more slowly, give it time to develop its ecosystem, which is not going to happen in the next 3 weeks. Like, just give it time to develop its ecosystem over a year, maybe more. Give it time for them to maybe get a version 2 out there that can maybe get a little bit lower in price, and then we'll start seeing them pushing it harder and harder over time. But I think it's going to be like kind of a slow ramp up to that level of promotion.
And I know we're getting off on a tangent here. I know we've talked about this before in the past, but as we approach launch day, and as I see, you know, developers who are like submitting their apps or thinking of submitting their apps, I'm getting more and more of a terrible feeling about what the state of the app ecosystem is going to be.
Oh, it's going to be
Vision
bad.
Pro. Like, and I was thinking about this the other day. I had mistakenly thought for a moment in my mind, oh, people can just use their Macs through it because it's got that screen, you know, the thing where you can see your Mac screen inside the thing. But the thing I had in my mind was like, this product would almost be better sold as a display for a Mac, or like you'd have a Mac built into it, like a little, like the motherboard of a MacBook Pro, like in a little container with the battery or whatever. Like that Mac apps, like the, you know, Mac apps that need a really big screen that have multiple windows and stuff like that, that is actually the best use case for this with no software until and unless an app ecosystem can build up around it. And I know that instead they're saying, well, it's iPad apps. You can run your iPad apps on it if they allow you to do it, blah, blah, blah. But iPad apps seem to me, I don't know, like I've never had a dream of this iPad app would be way better if I could have it on a bigger screen, or if I could have, you know, multiple copies of, like, because they're just so, they're so focused on a single screen, and yeah, you've got slide over and split view and stuff like that. But Mac apps are the ones that you want to have a million different windows and big things out in front of you and everything like that. But this is not a Mac. And, you know, it's trying to be its own platform. And in the meantime, it's like, well, I can run some iPad apps if you want. And just that first year, like, especially with Apple's general inability to foster a healthy app ecosystem on anything except for a device they sell billions of copies of, makes me worry a lot about not so much the hardware and does it fit on people's faces and everything like that, because that is going to be a problem, but that can be worked out. But, like, once all that's worked out, what do I see inside this thing? What software do I want to use inside it? And I keep thinking, Mac software. Mac software would work well in there. It's, you know, the next version of this could be the best screen you've ever had for your Mac. Really complicated, lots of windows, using a mouse and keyboard in front of you that you can see because you can see your keyboard through the transparency mode thing, or you can touch type or whatever. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm entirely wrong considering I've never used one of these things, but I'm really worried about what's going to be inside that headset. And, you know, and if it's a $3,500 really good movie viewer, then it's kind of like me buying the OLED iPad to watch TV on it. I mean, it's a use case, but I'm not sure it's going to be that common.
So I'm not allowed to tell you what I think about what you just said.
I know. Well, we'll get there.
I would suggest that you are actually more wrong than you think. I would suggest don't, you know, everyone out there, don't preset expectations in your mind too much beforehand about how you might use this device before you've actually used one. I think it will surprise you in a few ways.
I mean, I would love to watch.
I've already said
$3,500 is a lot.
Yeah, but it, you know, I frankly don't see that Mac use case being that big of a use case. But again, I've probably already said too much.
I mean, I don't mean the one that they're shipping, which is like screen sharing with the Mac. I mean, like Mac apps running on.
No, yeah,
the
I know. I can imagine a future version of that feature where Mac windows actually get broken out and can free float in the space.
Maybe I'm describing wrong. I don't mean like Mac windows with like the stoplight buttons and all that stuff floating in front of you. I mean like what somebody said, Mac style apps. You know what I mean? Like the correct donor platform for apps on the Vision Pro is not the iPad, but is instead the Mac. So that it just, because the limitations of iPad applications, like the fact that they don't even have the concept of Windows. Vision Pro has Windows. I know they're not quite Windows, but like it has individual floating things. That's its whole deal. It's got the ornaments and separate accessory windows, and you don't have to lay things on top of each other. You can just put it next to it because you can turn your head a little bit and there's more crap over there. That's a Mac paradigm. iPad doesn't work like that. So I'm thinking like, native Vision Pro apps that are essentially Vision Pro-ified versions of the Mac apps, not Vision Pro-ified versions of the iPad apps. But again, I haven't used either one of these things, so I'm just speculating.
I think you'll be surprised. Like, when this comes out, when you do at some point somehow use one, I think you'll be surprised. And so again, like, just I strongly urge people, like, don't make too many assumptions about how you might use this until you have a chance to actually use one. And if that means that you can't justify paying $3,500 for it up front without knowing quite how you'll use it, that's understandable. You probably shouldn't jump on the pre-order then. Leave more room for me, please. But it's a very different device and paradigm than most people have ever used before. So, you know, like when the Apple Watch came out, or especially before anybody had actually used it, you know, when it was announced, everyone was kind of assuming that they would use the Apple Watch much like a tiny iPhone. And then we got the Apple Watch, and anybody who tried that was very quickly disavowed of that notion, because it was a terrible tiny iPhone, but it was really great for other things. People thought the iPad was basically a giant iPhone, and they would use it just like a giant iPhone. You kind of can, but it's better if you use it like an iPad. It's kind of its own thing. You know, even like the Apple TV, when the Apple TV, the one with apps, like, you know, the whatever generation that was that added the apps, when that was first announced and shown off, everyone's like, maybe I'll do some computing on my TV. And that didn't really pan out that way. Instead, we do other things with it. This is going to be the same kind of thing. We are trying to project onto it the paradigms we already know from devices we already have and have used, and saying, okay, well, I'm going to use this like a giant Mac. It's like, well, you might, but probably not. There's probably going to be other ways you use it that are like it. There, you know, you're going to use it like you're going to use a Vision Pro. You're not going to use it like any of the platforms, because it's very different from all the other platforms in so many different ways. So, like, don't go into it saying like, okay, well, I can justify this because it'll be like a really big monitor. And it's like, yeah, well, I mean, maybe you might do that, but go in with a more open mind. It might go a different direction for you. And until everyone has these and you can try them, you can see that you can see all the video reviews, you can see what kind of apps come out for it and everything, don't make too many assumptions early on.
I mean, that's the whole thing. Apple needs to get enough people to write applications that are for this. But I'm saying in the meantime, Apple's stopgap is, in the meantime, people can use iPad apps. Like in their announcement, which I think maybe we'll get to if we keep going here, they said like, oh, it has a million apps. What they mean is a million people have said, yes, you can run my iPad apps on your thing, I'm assuming. Like, because how do they know how many apps? They just opened up submissions the same day they put out their press release. We haven't even opened submissions for the Vision Pro App Store yet, but we know there'll be a million apps. Why? Those are iPad apps. That's their stopgap. That's their way of like, you get this, what can I run on it besides the built-in apps? Well, you got a million iPad apps that you can run. And that's not what we want you to do with it, but it's something until those apps start shipping. So it's up to Apple to foster an ecosystem that makes people make actual native Vision Pro apps. And what I'm saying is, I think the correct donor platform for the stopgap apps is more, it would be better to be the Mac, because those apps are designed to have multiple windows arranged. Maybe not all around you, but arranged all over the place. But we'll see. Maybe just multiple iPad apps is exactly fine as a stopgap. But I would think if anyone, I mean, I know because of the API things, that's not how it works, but someone porting a complicated app, Final Cut Pro for Vision Pro, should it be, should you start from the iPad version of that app or should you start from the Mac version? You're making a native Vision Pro version, but which version should you start from? And I think you should start from the Mac one, but they certainly won't because of the API differences. So that's a whole other kettle of fish. But, you know, spiritually, I feel like the canvas provided by the Vision Pro is so much more expansive than the canvas provided by the iPad. It makes me think more of the Mac.
Well, I think there are some critical differences, though. Like, you know, as a lot of like the VR bloggers and stuff have pointed out, like the density of the displays and the sizing of them. To me, like I think I would think about it more like TV screens than monitors. Like, you know, you look at computer monitors; they're very dense. You look at them much closer up. TV screens are big and beautiful, and you look at them from like, you know, 8 or 10 feet away, maybe. And it's a very different way of using it. Like, you know, imagine if computing was really fast and easy on an Apple TV, and you had an infinitely sized screen on the Apple TV. Like, but you're still sitting on the couch looking at something 6 feet away. Like, when you look at how windows are laid out in these VR headsets, like the distance they're simulating of how far in front of you they are, relatively how large they are, and you look at things like the density of the displays, like how many pixels they actually have, it's nowhere near the density of computer monitors. And so I would be surprised if when people actually use these, if they ended up actually wanting Mac-like density of controls and density of text and things like that. I think what we're going to want is going to end up looking kind of halfway between iPad apps and Apple TV apps.
Yeah, well, with the current density, you're right, because you know it's 4K per eyeball, but as we talked about when these initially launched, your floating window does not fill your entire field of vision, probably. So you're not even getting a 4K screen, which is, it's an achievement that they've apparently achieved the text legibility that they have, but it's not 200 pixels per inch, 4 feet from you. No. Not even close.
And it'll probably be a long time before we have that kind of hardware.
I don't know how long. Well, they're making good advances, but yeah, but the initial version isn't. So that's why a lot of these screenshots, they do look like Apple TV apps, like viewable from 6 feet away, big chunky controls, but they do also have lots of accessory stuff floating around.
Yeah, they do. That's why, like, there is no like direct paradigm, like, oh, it's just like a big iPad or whatever. Like, you can't say it's just like any of the platforms, but I really think it's going to end up being more like a combination of iPad plus Apple TV than Mac anything. Like, I think the sizing and the density and everything is all wrong for the Mac.
I mean, if we had displays that could support it, though, it would be great for doing Mac stuff in the same way if you had three Pro Display XDRs in front of you, right? If you had the density in that device to support the actual resolution of three Pro Display XDRs at arm's length around you, that would be amazing, and people would love it because it's smaller and hopefully cheaper than three Pro Display XDRs, and you don't need to connect them with cables, but that's not this generation of product.
I do understand what you're saying, though, John, that the Mac does at a glance seem like a better donor platform, but I think I have to come down on where Marco is in that. I think we're going to end up in this kind of weird, and I don't necessarily mean bad, but just maybe unusual halfway world between like iPad and Apple TV, like Marco was saying, and I expect that.
It's another reason why TV applications, like as in watching actual movies and television shows, is great for this because you're not going to notice the resolution deficit. Mm-hmm. Because it's television.
Yeah. So with that in mind, we've been talking and kind of glancing off the discussion about the app ecosystem and whatnot. So I've been thinking a lot about what I want to do with regard to this. And history says, I will be the first to tell you, I'm starting right out and telling you, history says I'm going to pre-order one because I'm a sucker and that's what I do. But I'm trying to be rational about this, which is not something I'm typically capable of doing, and I'm probably wasting everyone's time by even talking about this because I'll end up ordering one. But like, I don't think, coming back to our conversation a little while ago about like, did people really want an iPhone? Like, sitting here now, I don't know if I want to spend $3,500 on one of these. Starting at as a consumer. Now, this is with my consumer hat on. I have not yet put on my developer hat, but as a consumer, I don't know what I would use this for that would justify $3,500. Like, that is a tremendous amount of money, a truly tremendous amount of money. And
for people who are saying, oh, you buy laptops like that all the time, you know what you're going to use the laptop for. Like, right. It's not a speculative use case. Well, you know that you're going to get out of the box, and you know exactly what you're going to use it for.
You know, I mean, just for the point of comparison, though, John, how much is that really nice TV that you like?
I know what I'm going to use that for, too. That's what I'm saying. Like, this is speculative, because, like, it's not so much the price, because I'm preempting people who are going to say, you're complaining about $3,500, but every computer you ever buy is more than that. Yeah, but we all know what we're going to do with the computers or the television. We know exactly what we're going to do with them. We know how well they're going to do it, and we know we already have something that we're doing, and this is going to be a better one. So we plunk down that money for those easily. But for this one, I think Casey's question is apt, which is, like, if I wasn't a developer, even though it seems like a cool thing to get for $3,500, what am I going to do with it again? Like, the fear is you get it, you try the few pieces of software for it, and then it's a $3,500 thing sitting in the corner of your room.
Right, exactly. And I think in the defense of expensive TVs and expensive computers, whether or not Marco or I change computers like underwear, which I don't think either of us does, as much as I give Marco a hard time, no. And I certainly don't think I do. But that being said, any of the three of us could use any of the computers that we've bought recently for years and years and years. And sorry, that implies that that you are literally incapable of using a Vision Pro for years. That's not what I mean. But my M1 MacBook Pro that I just recently got rid of, I did not need to get rid of that. I chose to because I'm a sucker for space black and I'm an idiot, but I didn't need to. I could have held on to that computer for another probably 2 to maybe even 4 years, which would have made a sum total of what, 4 to 6 years of in service, which for a laptop, I know how much we hate laptops, John, but like for a laptop, I think somewhere between 4 and 6 years is a pretty good run. It's not, you know, it's not a humongously long run, but it's not a bad run by any stretch of the imagination. Your TV, when did you buy your fancy pants, non-plasma TV? That was what, 2 years ago, a year ago?
2022, I think.
Okay, so it was almost 2 years ago. And what's the likelihood you're going to replace that TV in the next 2 years?
Very low.
Exactly. And so you might choose to do it in a couple of years because there's a technology that you're really jazzed by.
You're really
understood. But I'm saying, like, one could elect to replace these things, but I don't think it'll be compulsory. Whereas with the Vision Pro, I am less convinced that it will hold up.
It's like a Series Zero watch. It's the first worst one,
right? Yeah,
like this
exactly.
Is gonna be, hopefully, that will be the worst one they ever make. And
right.
And if they do any kind of like significant, you know, turns in the course they're taking, like for instance, if they did get rid of the front facing display or things like that, if they were able to integrate the battery into the unit, like there are like some turns that they might be making with subsequent revision of the product that will make this one feel and look really old within probably a much shorter time than the useful lifetime of the next one that will come out, just because it is version zero.
Don't buy the Apple Vision Pro edition. some advice,
right? So
I can hold up.
So as a consumer, like. I don't, it's hard for me to justify spending $3,500. And funnily enough, the thing that I think most strongly makes me want this as a consumer, again, we'll talk developer in a second, but as a consumer, I think the thing that I'm most interested in for this is if I could put aside the fact that I'll look like a total doofus wearing this thing, if I could bring this to like a library or Wegmans or, you know, a coffee shop or what have you. And if I could not care about what I looked like, which I don't think I'm capable of, but if in this fantasy world where I don't care what other people are thinking as they're looking at me, I guess I'm always in the experience where you can't see anything around you. Immersive. There it is. I'm always in the immersive experience. So I can never see the people that are looking at me like I'm an idiot. But anyway, the thing that I think is most appealing about this to me is having a 4K version of my laptop screen and, you know, wherever I go. And that strikes me as though it would be extremely cool because then I can have my 4K laptop screen right in front of me. And I can have maybe the iPad version of Slack off to the side. I can have an iPad version, you know, or Vision Pro, strictly speaking, version of Safari off to the other side. And now I've got one heck of a nice workstation that I can bring pretty much anywhere. And that does appeal to me. I don't think it appeals to me for $3,500, but it appeals to me nonetheless. And so as a person, I want Marco to buy one and I want him to tell us what he thinks.
Well, that'll happen.
Right. And I want like a local friend. I don't have one in mind, but just, you know, I want one of my local friends to buy one.
A local friend with the same shape face as you.
Right.
Yeah,
well, that's
same
true
prescription.
Also fair.
Well, no, you can snap in and out the prescription. Oh, glasses, yeah, can't yeah. you?
But no, I take your point, though. You know, yeah, I want a local friend to get one so I can play with it. But I don't know that I want one for me yet. And I'm not saying that's forever, but I don't know if I want one for me yet. So all that in mind, now I put on my developer hat and everything gets real muddy real quick because...
It's not muddy. Your developer hat is you need one because you're developing an app for it. The end.
Well, and that's
well,
the thing.
But for what income?
Well, so it's both sides of this, right? So... On the one side, yes, I agree with what you said, John, that I'm going to have, I don't know if I'll have it on launch, probably not at launch day, but I will have a version of CallSheet that works reasonably well, hopefully, on the Vision Pro. And I think it makes a lot of sense in the Vision Pro, because if you can have, and I've had people write to me and confirm that this is possible, because I genuinely, truly do not remember it from my experience at the lab, if it is possible to have a non-immersive video player, and then you can slide CallSheet right next to it, which people are telling me that's possible. You can slide CallSheet right next to it, and you can be looking at a video and looking at CallSheet at the same time. You know, mind exploding. It's amazing. And that sounds really cool. And it sounds like it would be a really great idea to have it there. And it would be very useful to have it there. Additionally, as the chat room is pointing out, if by some miracle I can get it there for launch and it isn't a pile of garbage, which are two big ifs, then I could maybe get Apple to feature it or have, you know, reviewers feature it. I mean, imagine if iJustine gets a copy of this and somehow stumbles upon CallSheet. I don't know how that would happen, but just for the sake of discussion, then suddenly I'm having my WidgetSmith moment. I don't expect that, but you never know.
Well, on so, a platform that has no users.
Yeah, you can't have a WidgetSmith moment on a platform with a million users.
Well, and that's
even
the thing.
WidgetSmith won't have a WidgetSmith moment on this platform for some time.
You can sell to 100% of the user base and you're still not there.
Exactly.
And the problem is, and I was actually, I had a monthly FaceTime with James Thompson, friend of the show, James Thompson, who does PCalc among many other things. And he and I were chatting this morning and he pointed out to me a really good thing, which is so obvious, but I hadn't thought about that. Even if CallSheet arrives on the Vision Pro, and even if I can, you know, I can get it to the point that it's not embarrassing, even despite those things, it's the same SKU as it is on iOS, on iPadOS, on macOS. It's all universal. It's all the same SKU. So a lot, maybe even all of these users have already paid me. I've already gotten the money from
me. Why is it necessarily the same SKU? You can make a dedicated VisionOS version.
I could, but I don't plan on it. I mean, I could. I absolutely could, but I was not planning on it.
No, you totally should. Why wouldn't you?
Well, but you would have a shared, you know, subscription model.
Yeah.
Like that's you can have the same bundle ID and have it still be running native. Like you can you'd have to like submit it to the Vision Pro side of the App Store separately. That's the only thing that has to be separate.
Yeah, I mean, like I feel like universal apps where you write one app and it runs on all the platforms, you can pay for it once. Customers love them, but as a single indie developer, it's economically unfeasible. I feel like
no, honestly, it depends a lot on how much work you have to do from your existing code base to support this new platform. And that's why, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of people doing what I'm going to be doing, which is I'm going to permit my iPad app to run for a while. And I do intend to have a native version of Overcast for Vision Pro. I'm not going to make it anywhere near launch day. So for now, iPad version, and then we'll see. Now, you know, it's very similar in a lot of ways to if you have an iPhone app and you want to make it run on the iPad. Well, if the iPad's going to be a huge part of your market, maybe put a lot of time and thought into that. If it's only going to be kind of an accessory part of your market, you don't have to do everything custom for the iPad. You can just let the phone app run on the iPad with minimal modifications, and it won't be ideal, but it'll be fine. That's something we can do here. Like, you know, this platform is going to have very low sales volume for a while, so it's not going to be able to financially justify huge investments of custom work for it for an existing app necessarily, unless there's a really big market for it on this. And as mentioned last time, I don't think I have a big market. I think, Casey, yours is bigger than mine, so you know your calculus will be different than mine here. But you know, when I bring Overcast to VisionOS, I have some ideas on how I can do it and kind of, you know, kind of the experience I want it to be like. And to be honest, they're all pretty simple ideas that will require a bit of a more limited experience than like the full everything app with every single feature crammed into the, you know, to whatever window size I can get it crammed into. Like I'm looking at a very different design, but it would be a lower effort design for lots of reasons. That's going to be easier to justify because this platform is going to have no users basically for a while. And so what you're saying, Casey, is like, you know, I think there is a clear market for you to bring CallSheet to Vision OS with a native app that uses the same IAP as your iOS app, and much or most or all of the same code even. I don't know how much effort it will be worth for you to like invest 2 months of development time into it. That is probably not worth it.
No, I don't think it's worth it at all. And I guess the question I'm really asking, both indirectly and now directly, is I think I should put a modicum of effort into it to the order of like 2 weeks, not 2 months. And
yeah.
I think that's fair. But I don't know if I even I think putting two weeks or so of effort is fair. But do I really want to spend $3,500 worth of money, or leaving aside the effort? Do I want to spend all that money just to get call sheet on here? Like, I don't know if it's because I don't think I'll recoup.
Well, it's not worth it for the 2 week effort app. But I think, I mean, aren't you envisioning a future where you would spend more than 2 weeks to make an actual really good Vision OS version of your thing to be alongside the video when people are watching it? Like,
essentially, yes. But that would I wouldn't be justified in doing that unless I felt like I was getting some sort of financial return.
What you're getting
the
is first mover advantage, or you'd be early in the market. No, the first year you're not going to make that money back probably, but year two or three, you're already there. You're the one that people know when they read the reviews. Oh, if you're watching movies, you want to watch a thing. IMDb just has a shovelware port of their iPad app and it's terrible, but call sheet looks okay. Like you're getting in early in the hopes that you'll be the de facto look things up about the video that I'm watching in a Vision Pro.
Yeah. So I think from a developer's point of view, even though I don't particularly want to spend $3,500 on this, particularly after spending a whole pile of money on this laptop, which I probably shouldn't have done, I think I sitting here now, I'm leaning towards buying one. And then the other thing that I need to consider is I actually have a third hat, which is the one I'm actually wearing right now, which is as a podcaster. And I think it would make for much better programming on this very show if at least one, preferably two, or in a perfect world, three of us have one of these
I have a solution to that, by the way. It's called Apple sends us review units.
If only, John, if only.
You don't get to keep them forever.
Oh, well, I'll talk to Gruber about that. Fine forever. On an infinite timeline, Gruber will return all his products.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I agree with you that I'd love a review unit, but ultimately, for better or worse, I can continue to whine and moan about this, but ultimately it seems clear that we are not on Apple's radar in that capacity. And so I have to just understand, I can't wait for that to happen. So I have to understand.
It's not going to happen. Don't wait for it.
Right. So I need to take matters into my own hands. And I think as a podcaster and as a developer, two of the three hats that I'm wearing say, I should probably try to pick one of these up. Now, I haven't talked to the family CFO yet, and I have a feeling they might have some conflicting opinions about this. But sitting here now, it seems like, and I still haven't made a final decision, but it seems like it's probably prudent for me to get one so that this way I can make call sheet as good as it can reasonably be done. Because I can tell you, I don't think it's unfair for me to say that spending the day in the lab gave me a lot of useful feedback. And I'm saying just from myself, like in using the app, it was incredibly useful to experience it on the actual platform as compared to the simulator. And the simulator is very good for what it is, but having experienced it on the actual device gave me all sorts of clues and ideas and things to do that I never would have considered had I not had the thing on my face. And I don't think Apple would be grumpy at me for saying that. So in so many ways, I think I'll probably also be lining up on the virtual queue on a week from Friday or whatever it is in trying to put my hands on one. And I will probably get the cheapest one they will possibly sell me, which is still a damn fortune.
Yeah, I would call it the least expensive, not the cheapest.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But yeah. I don't know. And it's funny because I seem so morose and down on it. And I actually don't mean to. And again, now I'm getting into dangerous territory because I don't want to talk about what happened at the lab. But there is a lot about this platform to be very excited about. And I think Marco was hinting at the same earlier. There's a lot to be excited about here. It's just I find the price so off-putting, it may sound nuts, but I think of myself as a relatively frugal person. And I know, especially in the last 6 months, some of my expenditures may indicate otherwise. But generally speaking, I don't enjoy spending money just for spending money's sake. And I really try to be, prudent and frugal with my expenditures. And it's so much money. It's so much money on what seems to be a hope and a prayer. And that's the thing that just freaks me out. And I hope so much that I can tell you there's a lot of potential in this platform. And again, now I'm starting to get into dangerous territory again, but there's a lot of potential in this platform. And I really hope that between Apple and third-party developers, it gets realized because there's a lot there.
I think, first of all, like, however much we want to hem and haw about the price will not matter at all, because if there's any truth whatsoever to the rumors that they can only make, say, $1 million a year, like, there's enough rich people in the world who will jump on this that it won't matter what the YouTubers say and what we all say
about
the price.
That's an interesting point, yeah.
Like, that's, like, if they can truly only make it in relatively small volumes, there are enough buyers out there who will buy it at that price, it won't matter. So, you know, setting that aside, for developers' point of view, I think your suspicion is correct. You will not make $3,500 in sales on this platform in all likelihood in the first year. It seems very unlikely. And so again, gauge your level of effort accordingly. For us in particular, I think it makes total sense to buy it just because, again, like, this podcast is a big part of our careers and jobs and income. Mm-hmm. And so we need it just for that, honestly. Like, even if none of us had any other use for it other than to try it and talk about it, we should probably all get it just for that purpose alone. But I think it is nerds like us are going to try to somehow rationalize this price because it's cool. But you don't need to rationalize the price. It can just be cool. Like, there are concert tickets that are this expensive, and people pay them because it's cool and they want it. Like, that's it. That's enough of a reason sometimes. We can try to justify it as whatever you need to do, justify it. That's fine. But many of the buyers of the Vision Pro, especially in this first year, are going to be people who are buying it because they think it's cool and they want it. And they don't need to say, well, I'll be able to get my work done, or I can fund it with my development. Nope, you don't and you can't. It's just cool and you want it. That's okay. As long as you can lose that amount of money and not, like, harm your family as a result or something, or not get yourself into, like, debt, or, like, you know, if you can afford it, it's okay to spend money on things that make you happy and are cool to you. That's all it needs to be. And there's enough people in the world who can spend that money, who will do it just solely for those reasons. They'll be fine. They'll be sold out and backordered the entire year. So doesn't matter if we think it's too expensive, or if some YouTuber with the O face on their thumbnail says it's too expensive. Is this really worth it? Like, you know you're going to see 1,000 of those. And the answer will be, they're going to say it's not. All the commenters are going to say it's not. And you still can't buy one because they're backordered. So it doesn't matter. Enough people think it's cool that they're going to sell all of them. Now, whether there is an app market for you as a developer, that's a different question, of course. It's so hard to step around lab experiences here. So I'll make an analogy for something I can talk about, because I had no pre-release access whatsoever. The iPad. I was running Instapaper at that time. That was my app. And the iPad came out, and as you recall, because we remember previous Apple product launches and their hype cycles, John, as you recall, the iPad was announced a few months before it was available. I believe it was announced in January, came out in April, something like that. And so during that time, we had the SDK for it, so we could run, like, the iPad simulator, exactly like we have the Vision Pro today. Like, we had the Vision OS simulator, but we don't have the hardware yet as developers. So just like that, we had a few months where we had the simulator for the iPad, and we could get our apps ready for the App Store and get them there on day one. Great. So I did that with Instapaper. We did all sorts of things. We, like, you know, made, like, cardboard mock-ups so we would know how big the iPad was in our hands, and out, like, the screenshot, like, on paper at the exact right size of the iPad screen so we could see, like, is this big enough, you know? And all of that, it felt like we were really preparing for this platform. And then I remember I got the iPad on launch day, and I launched Instapaper on it, and I used it for, like, 5 minutes, and I was like, this is all wrong. Everything I had done for months with the simulator and with paper mockups and cardboard and everything, it was all immediately upon using the real hardware. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is not a good design for this. This doesn't work. This is different. This should be like this. It was so clear to me that the design I had made based on the simulator and guesses was just not right. I had the same feeling when I ran the app that I have in progress for Overcast on the real Vision Pro. Everything I thought about the design of how it should be was wrong and bad. I would strongly suggest to anybody who actually is going to take this seriously as a developer, like, if you really want to make a Vision OS version of your app that it's not just your iPad app running on a window, if you're actually using, like, the native controls, you want it to actually be a first-class Vision OS app, be a third-class Vision OS app, you need the hardware. That's it. It is so different. The real device is so different than seeing your app in the simulator. I will be honest. I have done zero further development on Overcast for Vision OS after the lab because I learned in the lab, oh, I'm wrong about everything, and I need the hardware to know that, and I need to develop whatever I'm going to develop for it. I'm going to need to develop it with the hardware. So I have totally paused Vision OS development of Overcast until I have a Vision Pro. And I strongly suggest for all developers out there, if you are going to take this platform seriously and try to make a good version of your app, don't even bother doing it now. Do it when you have the hardware, and definitely get the hardware. Like, you're going to need it. You're not going to be able to make a good app with simulators alone. You just can't on this platform. It's too different. It's way too different. You don't even realize how different it is if you haven't had the chance to go to a lab. So if you intend to have an app on this platform, you need the hardware, period. So don't even worry about the cost. Just consider it a cost of developing an app for this platform.
Unless you're making the Vision Pro beer drinking app, in which case, just do it in the simulator. It'll be fine.
I'm sure they'll get right on approving that in the App Store.
It's an impulse purchase. People will get it because they want to try something fun on their Vision Pro. Your app will stink for the reasons Marco stated, but it doesn't matter because you've already got their money.
All right. Hi, future Marco. I think we should probably just move into the post show. But
no, do this last little bit here because it's totally on topic. You guys went too long.
Yeah, but finish Vision Pro stuff right, and then we'll go.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so then finally, Apple has some Vision Pro app submission advice, and there's a bunch of interesting things here, some of which, I don't know, I'm really giving some serious side eye to, but, you know, John, you put an image in the show notes here. It says, don't tilt or distract from your app window, don't depict cluttered surroundings, and don't show foveated rendering. Do you want
this to for the screenshots that you would submit for your app, like, hey, here's my app in action on the Vision Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And they give an image to show all the don'ts, which I thought was hilarious. So first of all, the tilting, I mean, okay. I mean, I do wonder if they're actually enforced this, but it's like, you should know this from our past conversations. A Dutch angle. Okay, so it's tilted, right? But the second one is the one that's getting the most play. Don't depict cluttered surroundings. As someone pointed out in Mastodon, it would take me a week to get my house to look this uncluttered. This is their example of cluttered surroundings.
Yeah,
must pain Apple's like set dressers to try to make cluttered surroundings. They're like, I guess we can put an extra item on the coffee table. And it's like, oh, it hurts me so much to do this, but here's an extra item. Instead of just a plant, now there's a plant and a book. And, oh, on the floor is an item. What item? I don't know, but there's an item on the floor. And it's open. And someone put their jacket on the table. I can't look. It's too cluttered. This is like the neatest house you've ever seen in your entire life. Do not depict cluttered surroundings. So ridiculous. And then the final one is weird to me. Foveated rendering is when you render the part that the people aren't looking at lower resolution. Is it even possible to grab screenshots in the Vision Pro with foveated rendering? I thought the screenshots were always everything rendered at full res, but yeah, I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
If you capture a video feed of it, maybe it would follow your
I mean,
videos.
I guess
I
you
know.
Could simulate it, but like, why would you do that? But yeah, no, you can't use foveated rendering if you don't know where people are looking. The whole image has to be rendered at the complete resolution.
Yeah, and ultimately on the on the clutter angle, I think that actually might slightly hinder the product in like for
because no one can have that. No one has that environment.
Yeah, who is working in an environment that is uncluttered enough to have all these windows floating?
I mean,
on top
I guess
of
you
it.
Could just send simulator screenshots, right?
Yeah, and yes, I mean, yeah, the reality is like for App Store screenshots, that's what everyone's going to do. They're just going to use simulator screenshots, but. You know, for actual use of the product with windows floating in space when you're not in an immersive environment, I think that's actually going to be a somewhat of a limiting factor because, like you know, like Casey gave the coffee shop example earlier. Like, I mean, first of all, I would never wear this in a coffee shop. Like, I feel guilty wearing AirPods in a coffee shop. Like, so this is way out of my comfort zone. But, like, you're going to want, if you're actually going to be computing in it, you're probably going to want to be in the fully immersive mode almost all of the time when you're out in the world, and even in your own house, probably much of the time, because, like, my office is not that clean. Like, where am I in my house that is that clean? It's never, anywhere. So there's, and I think most people, don't have a space in their house that is anything like what Apple shows in the simulator as like possible good environments for the Vision Pro. These are
maybe in a model home, if you go visit a model home or something.
Or yeah, or like an empty museum as one of them. It's like, I guess maybe, but like, yeah, it's a very ideal view of the world that I think does not reflect people's actual houses and offices very well.
Indeed. So they continue, don't break Apple Vision Pro over two lines.
This is hilarious, okay?
Ow.
So the name of the product is three words with spaces between them, Apple Vision Pro. Like, if I put that text somewhere in my description, which we'll get to in a little bit, but it's this thing they're actually going to allow. Thank you so much, Apple. I can't control if it's over two lines. I don't know. Like,
non-breaking space,
yeah,
baby.
Non-breaking space. Apple AMP, NBSP, Vision AMP, NBSP
Pro.
Well,
then why don't they just say that? Is that what they demand? Or are they just saying, don't break it over two lines? They don't say it should be Apple Vision Pro with non-breaking spaces between all the words. And even then, non-breaking spaces that, you know, if it's rendered in some context that doesn't honor them, then it's such a demand. I'm sure Apple doesn't want them broken up, but it's like, okay, Apple, then you don't break them up. I can't control what you do with
you
my
do
text.
Yeah. Also, like, I think it is, they have their work cut out for them if they want people to use all three of these words. Because that's what they say in their guidance. It's Apple Vision Pro. It's not just
right,
Vision
not
Pro.
Not just Vision Pro.
It's Apple Vision Pro.
Vision.
And there is, everyone's going to call it Vision Pro. No one's going to call it Apple Vision Pro. Like,
well,
so,
I mean, this is in text that they can audit, right? So
yeah,
that's,
but
yeah.
Like, it's just like, you know, when they launched like the Apple Watch, no one just called it Watch because that's too generic of a word. But and so if they would have called this Vision just by itself, like Apple Vision, maybe they would have stood a chance of people calling it Apple Vision or not just Vision. But
yeah,
by
people
calling
would have called
Vision,
it Apple Vision with no space then.
Yeah, right. But by calling it Apple Vision Pro, Vision Pro by itself is uniquely identifying enough in this time and place that everyone will just say Vision Pro. Like, so
there are people pointing
out
that some Apple stuff just says Vision now, just says Apple Vision or Vision. I think even their navs just says Vision. Like, so there's Apple itself is trying to do the generic term to essentially make room for the fact that they'll be a non-pro someday.
Yeah, but ultimately, I mean, maybe they should have actually called it Apple Vision, you know, just to get to kind of like lay that groundwork better, because now when everyone's going to be calling it Vision Pro without the Apple for, you know, however many years, it's the only product in the lineup. And then once they make one that's not called Pro at the end, they're going to have to like, we're all going to have to like retrain ourselves to start saying Apple in front of it where we weren't saying it before. It's just
on their homepage, by the way, Apple currently has the Apple logo, no space, Vision space Pro.
Well, we aren't allowed to do that.
Right, exactly.
I mean, in all fairness, they also style watch and TV that way.
Yeah, yeah. Also, anyway, continue with the last of these, Casey, because they're all fun.
This one drives me freaking batty, and it's consistent. At least they're consistent across all their products. It reads as follows. Don't use the article "the" before Apple Vision Pro. It's not the iPhone, it's iPhone. It's not the iPad, it's iPad. It's not the Apple Vision Pro, it's Apple Vision Pro. I don't know why this drives me nuts. It's I should let it go, to be honest with you, but it drives me nuts that they
and
don't do
like,
this.
I'm going to say, oh, that's recent. Yeah, it's recent in the past 25 years. People always just talk about software being available on the Mac, but these, you know, in the past several decades, that software is available on Mac.
Yep. Oh, it drives me bananas. Don't refer to Apple Vision Pro generically as a quote-unquote headset.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
the phrase Apple Vision Pro can't be included in your app name, but it can be included in your app description.
Oh,
thank you so much.
Put the word iOS in your Mac app's description or it will get rejected, but we're allowing you to say the name of our product in your description.
Right, because
it's not like
it's
like
so generous
Macbeth
to allow us to tell our customers what platform this runs on.
Exactly. You know, updated for future versions of macOS. Don't mention macOS. We don't want people to know about it.
Right. And then you should refer to your app as a spatial computing app. Don't describe your app experience as augmented reality, AR, virtual reality, VR, extended reality, XR, or mixed reality, MR.
Even if it's a one or all of those things, don't say it.
Don't say it. Yeah, don't
so
say
we
it.
We can just say it. Apple can say it, but you can't say it.
Yes. Oh, God, what a... It's ridiculous. Oh, these are very... They're very Apple. These are very,
they're
like, you know,
very
little,
Apple.
Persnickety this, little things that are, I think, a little bit optimistic on how people talk.
This is Apple. This is one of the parts of Apple I do not care for. Like, I understand the motivation here on their end, but Just chill out.
I mean, it makes sense because to give the context again here, these are app submission guidelines. You in your regular life can call it a headset all you want. We call it a headset on this program all you want. Apple would prefer us not to, but in the end, they have no control over it.
They would prefer us to just call it headset.
Right. But when it comes to the App Store, that they do have control over, and they will reject your app if you put like Vision Pro, the Apple Vision Pro in the name of your app, like new, you know, Flappy Birds for Apple Vision Pro, and that's the name of your app, rejected. Well, probably not, because someone's going to let it go through because they didn't read these guidelines. But anyway, to the extent that any App Store stuff is applied consistently, that's the one thing that they can control. Meanwhile, everybody in all their reviews is going to be capitalizing Vision Pro when it's the first word in the sentence, or Vision OS when it's the first word in the sentence, and you're not supposed to do that. We're going to be calling it a headset. People are going to be mentioning AR and VR, and there's nothing Apple can do about it, but somewhere, some Apple marketing person will have a single tear roll down their cheek as they read those reviews.
And then very, very quickly before we go, Apple is going to offer Vision Pro demos at its retail stores for regular people.
Wait,
Apple
Vision Pro demos?
Sorry, yes. Which one of you failed me in the show?
That's
notes
The Verge. There. The Verge failed you.
Fair enough. Starting at 8 a.m. on Friday, February 2, we invite you to sign up for a demo of Apple Vision Pro at your local Apple store. Demo times will be available Friday through the weekend on a first-come, first-served basis. We can't wait to see you there. Interesting. And it implies, by the way, and I think The Verge said this, that it's only the first weekend, which seems bananas to me, but maybe that's the story. I don't know.
It is quite an ordeal to provide those demos. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like time per person, how much staff, how much hand holding. It's really a big time sink to run indefinitely. I don't know if it's just going to be the first weekend, but it seems like a lot.
Yeah, I only have one more question. How tall is Egypt?
Someone will answer that, and then they'll get Amazon Karma for it, and then you'll be able to ask your little cylinder in the house.
Was Superman real?
Yes. Yes.
Superman's alive. Why is there a past tense?
Oh, my God. All right. Thanks to our sponsor this week, Trade Coffee, and thank you to our members who support us directly. You can join us at atp.fm/join, and we will talk to you next week.
I have one more Vision Pro tidbit to smuggle into the after show, which I forgot to mention when we were talking about it before. I know I talked about it in Slack as well, but I'm still curious what the actual focal distance is. If Apple provided it to you, you can't tell me if they told you in the labs. But anyway, as we discussed in the past, at least I still think that it is a fixed focal distance inside the headset. What is that distance? Is it 1 feet, 2 feet, 5 feet, 3 feet, 8 feet? And I ask again because I'm an old person and I want to know what prescription I should tell them.
I think it might even be like in the Higgs somewhere, like in the design guidelines for Vision OS apps. It might be stated there.
But I mean, I think they talked like the default distance of windows that are floating in front of you, and that you assume that's also the focal distance. But it seems like a tech spec. Like the reason I bring it up with the context of demos is when you sit to the demos, like we said when we talked about before, they're going to say, okay, well, what's your prescription? And I'm like, tell me the focal distance.
I would ballpark it as like, whatever, like in a typical like living room, like whatever you would use to watch your TV,
I was
that's
say
probably what you want.
Yep,
my TV is kind of far away. I just want to measure my feet. That's
I'm
all
trying
I'm
to help you out, man.
I know, but it seems like it shouldn't be. They're going to have to ask people that, right? And that they're going to find out when they give the people the lenses, and they're like, oh, it's still blurry, and they're going to give them different ones, and it's just like just tell us the distance.
Oh my God, what does a princess mean?
What is the focal distance of the Apple Vision Pro? Sorry, of Apple Vision Pro? No, the. Why
what
don't you
is
put
the
that in the karma question? Someone will answer it.
Yeah. Oh, do you want that answer, though?
Yeah, sure. They'll, you know, someone for Amazon Karma, someone will break into Apple Park and find out the answer.
Oh, my God.
For karma. For
how
karma.
Many cups is 3/8 cup?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I think we've created a monster here, folks.
If you could ask that to one of your cylinders, I bet they'll give you the right answer.
Well, now it doesn't know, because I'm so dumbfounded by the answer. Apparently, so was the Alexa system, and it also can't answer this and is asking people for answers.
Oh, my word. All right, is that it? Because I think a short episode
is fine.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. Yeah, that gives us 2 hours, and you know, cut out a little bit.
How much wood would a woodchuck chuck? Alex already knows the answer to that one. That's one of their canned things. Oh,
do God. Grasshoppers have tongues as a title suggestion?
Yeah,
that's pretty
that.
Good. That's pretty good.
There should be a question mark, though.
I think that might be my winner. I mean, I haven't looked at barely anything else, but that is pretty freaking good. We have materials for mice is also pretty good.
Let's see. And yeah, the materials from Rice is decent. I think Grasshopper Tongues might be the best.
Yeah, I think so too.
Let's see. A Melted Subaru is not bad.
The person who put the non-breaking spaces in, you know how many bug reports we would get?
Oh, yeah. Everyone would say our feed was broken.
Your feed is messed up.
That's not going to happen. We are not doing that. A Stinky Cushion is not bad.
That is pretty good. I do like that. I still think Grasshopper is my favorite, but Stinky Cushion is good.
It's called tinting.
Yeah, I think Grasshoppers is it.
Yeah, yep. Question mark.
Yeah,
with question mark?
Yeah, that, yes.
Okay.
All right,
go team.
What was the answer to the Grasshopper one? I don't know if they have tongues.
It was zero answers. I don't know. Do they have like
Seems like you could just type that into the internet and get the actual answer pretty quickly.
Somebody get some karma fast.
Yeah. Ask ChatGPT. We can
Grasshoppers have no tongue.
Low reliability answer.
Instead, they have complex, confusing-looking mouth parts designed to bite and chew plant matter. That's what Google says.
There you go. You got to paste that in, earn your karma.
Complex, confusing-looking mouth parts. That's not a description you want applied to yourself, probably.
Well, I don't think we'll offend the grasshoppers.
The predator from the movie Fame has complex, confusing-looking mouth parts, right?
I don't know. I never saw it.
So do spiders.
Yeah, I've never seen it either.
Never seen Predator movies. Yeah, it's before your time.
I mean, even to be fair, even in my time, I've seen no movies, so that's not really an excuse I can use.
So, just for the bootleg, this is not for release. I have a very good friend that lives around here, and he and I have been trying to, you know, trade movie recommendations back and forth, and we discovered over the last few years. Just hold on, John.
How do I not release this?
Just hold on. So we have discovered over the last year or so that my friend Brad is super in. He's only, I think, a year older than I am, but he is super into what I would describe as fucking awful 80s movies, like truly terrible 80s movies. And as an example, I don't remember who brought it up to me, but somebody brought up the movie. I think I want to say it was Iron Eagle or something like that.
A favorite of mine as a child.
Okay, there you go. And so I knew nothing of this movie, and I watched the trailer, and this looked like the dumbest fucking movie that
I've incredibly dumb, but here's what I had going for it. If you are a young child who fantasizes about flying jet planes, this is a movie in which a kid flies a jet plane.
I get that.
That's all it needs to be.
That's it.
Like the Rocketeer was terrible, but it was like...
Oh, you bite your
tongue. Rocketeer is not terrible, Marco. Silence your mouth.
Silence your mouth, sir. You're confusing mouth parts.
Iron Eagle is terrible. But if you are a little kid who likes jet planes, if you want to learn about the ins and outs of the F-16, watch Iron Eagle.
Sure. Well, so anyway. So it's
the
just,
Hollywood version, of course.
So I don't even remember when Predator came out, but I'm assuming it's another 80s movie. And yeah, so we've concluded that I really, really, really do not care for most, like, kind of popcorn cinema 80s movies, and my friend Brad is like obsessed with them.
Well, I mean, you can do better than Iron Eagle. You're really scraping.
In his defense, he never suggested that to me. So I was talking to somebody else about it and realized, oh, this looks like something Brad would have loved. And so I sent him, I sent him a trailer, asked him about it, and he was like, oh yeah, I fucking love that movie growing up.
But it's like, it's all retro for him though. Like I was watching it like in real time, like, you know, age appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. In any case, it just struck me funny when you talked about Predator because I immediately thought about how, oh, it's an 80s movie.
I could ask call sheet, but it's too far away.
Sorry. You should have strapped
Starbucks
to your face.
Jesus. Lots of past tense stuff. Yep. Predator is 87.
There you go. And I mean, I'm not saying Predator's bad. I'm not saying I wouldn't like it. I'm just saying
Predator is better than Iron Eagle.
Well, honestly, watching grass grow looks better than Iron Eagle. Based on the trailer, at least. But that's okay.
They didn't know. Also, keep in mind they didn't know how to make trailers back then.
That is fair.
Modern,
that is a good
modern
point.
Sensibility. If you watch a trailer for, like, you know, your favorite movie in the world, you're like, oh my
that's
God,
fair.
This trailer. Like, go watch the trailer for a Star Wars movie. I mean, you don't even like them that much. But anyway, the trailers were awful back then. They had no idea what they were doing.
I feel like I've seen the Hunt for Red October trailer, and it was truly terrible.
Like, if you saw that trailer, you'd be like, this movie looks awful, but it's not. They just didn't know how to make trailers.
No.
They didn't know how to optimize their thumbnail with their O face on it.
Well done.
That's essentially what modern trailers are, you realize. They're the TikTokification of the movies. They figured it out years and years before TikTok existed, or YouTube for that matter.
What does bee chilling mean?
What does what mean?
Bee chilling. Like two words.
Be chilling.
Be
yeah.
chilling.
I imagine this thing is starting to wander into Urban Dictionary territory.
Yeah, right. What is Riz?
Yeah.
All right, goodbye, live people, for real this time.
What are the succulents?
Oh, Jesus. All right, maybe apparently we're stuck here forever.
It's just so bad. All right,
this is your new favorite website.
I know, yeah. Seriously.
All right, thanks, live people. We'll see you next week.
Bye.